No matter your disability, you likely face barriers in your everyday life. At Neil Squire, we help break those barriers down by helping you access employment, technology, and the tools you need to live your life to the fullest. As a nonprofit organization, we empower people with disabilities all across Canada, and we are here for you too. Visit neilsquire.ca to learn more.
Speak up. You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Healing Together is a series of intimate and thoughtful conversations hosted by SFU alums Salome Mengo Morales, Ira Rishi, undergraduate student Kovo, and myself, Paola Quiroz Cruz, one of the educators at the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office. Featuring guests from diverse professional and life experiences, these interviews explore how healing, while deeply personal, is also profoundly communal. Healing thrives when communities come together to create spaces, attitudes, and practices that support it. Join us as we listen, reflect, and reimagine healing as a shared responsibility. In this special episode highlighting SFU Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we learn from counselors, mental health professionals, academics, and educators who remind us that healing and justice can take many forms and that we all play a role in shaping spaces that support survivors. As Afro-American author Prentice Hemphill asks in their book, What It Takes to Heal, what would it do movements to our society and culture to have the principles of healing at the very center? And what does it do to have healing at the center of every structure and everything we create? In this first episode of our podcast series, Salome Mengo Morales, an SFU alumna, sits down with Dalia Israel, Executive Director of Salal Sexual Violence Support Center, for a powerful conversation about the role of community in healing from sexualized violence. Together, they explore why creating time and spaciousness is essential for processing legacies of harm and how these practices support long-term resilience. Dalia shares insights on the often overlooked dimensions of grief and spirituality, inviting listeners to consider how these elements can deepen healing. This episode offers thoughtful reflections drawn from Dalia's and Salo's experience within the gender-based violence sector, emphasizing that healing is not a solitary journey but one rooted in connection and compassion. This conversation includes reference to sexualized violence. We encourage you to take care for yourself and reach out to support resources if needed.
Hello, everyone. My name is Salome Mengo Morales, one of your hosts for this series. I used to be a volunteer at SFU SVSPO until I graduated from SFU with a bachelor's degree in world literature and international studies. I am now currently working as a volunteer for Salal Sexual Violence Support Center, but I serve as a crisis line volunteer and provide support in group counseling sessions. In today's episode, I'm joined by Dalia Israel. In 2003, after completing a bachelor's degree in women's studies with a focus on critical studies and sexuality from the University of British Columbia, Dalia started working full-time in the Victim Service Program in WABAV, now known as Salal Sexual Violence Support Center. Eventually joining the management team, Dalia oversaw Salal's Victim Service Program and Educational Outreach Program for more than 7 years. And since 2019, Dalia has been the executive director of Salal. Dahlia also presents regularly at many local professional development nights for teachers, social workers, counselors, and victim service workers about the best practices for responding to survivors of sexual assault. All this hard work and years of advocacy offers so much insight into how we can build communities that truly support healing. Together, we'll be exploring restorative justice in the role of healing. We're grateful to have Dahlia with us to share reflections and wisdom. Hello, Dahlia. I'm beyond honored to have you with us today. And thank you for us joining us. Is there anything else you would like to add about yourself and all the beautiful work you do?
Thanks, Salome. I guess one of the biggest pieces that influences my thinking around restorative ways and principles these days is being a mom. So I'll add that I am a mother and a daughter, and also identify as having intergenerational trauma in my family, and that I'm also a survivor.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I feel like also knowing your history as a survivor, like you're as a mother, as a daughter, shows so much light into the work you do too. It comes from a different perspective too. It shows so much more power being part of the change too, you know?
Yeah, that was definitely what brought me to WAVA in 2002 as also a volunteer, for sure.
I'm so glad you're here with us today, and thank you for sharing all that.
Yeah.
And I think we can start with our questions for today too, if you want. So starting with the first question and following this theme of the series about healing being both personal and collective, what does communal healing mean to you as a survivor and as a professional too?
Yeah. So I feel like I have lots to say about this, actually. I think that as far as the organization goes and as far as Salal goes, we always say that we both support survivors and also shift society. And I think that comes from the deep kind of knowing within our movement and the feminist movement that we stand on the shoulders of so many activists that have long told us that the personal is political. And so this idea that we can somehow separate our own experiences when we're in a professional setting or when we're offering services from the personal, which means our own personal work and our own personal lived experiences, is just really impossible. And I also come from traditions that tell me that in order to heal the world, we also have to start with healing ourselves. So I think that when we talk about communal healing and what that means for me personally, what that does mean is that if we're not individually doing our own work to find out where our wounds are, how we've come to understand certain things about ourselves and about the world, that trying to make inroads to fix really complex social issues in the world will be impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with what you were saying too about how healing comes from within too. In order to heal others and to heal the world in a way, we need to find that, not even peace, but like find what's broken and embrace it to fix it or like heal
in a
way. And I feel like even your work in Salal, and like I'm seeing that as a volunteer now too, being part of that community too, like as survivors, they help us heal at the same time as we are helping others heal. Like we can like be hand in hand with this work too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I do think that communities that are by and for, so having sexual assault centers, you know, as us as an example, be filled with the people who have experienced harm and who have started to do the work so that they're able to then go on and support other communities is some of the like richest and most beautiful work that can be done for sure.
Yeah, it is truly beautiful and healing. Honestly, it is.
Yeah.
And since you're talking about these spaces and the communal And also it's a lot on your work in there. And thinking also what kind of spaces, maybe like physical, emotional, or even cultural to have supported either your healing or the healing of those around you, the ones you work with. What are some practices, personal, cultural, creative, or spiritual, that you have seen be especially powerful in supporting healing from sexualized violence?
I mean, I think what I've learned over the years is that so many of us have been implicated by patriarchy in our spiritual spaces and or through colonization. And many of us have lost like really meaningful connections to spirit. And that tends to be left out of many of our healing practices in dominant culture, and for good reason, right? Like many people have been really harmed by dogma and colonization and patriarchy. But it is something that I've noticed over the years that needs to be attended to. And so I think that spaces that allow for people to have autonomy over their process and that are supported to tap into what their spirit needs. And that can look like a thousand different things, but just to be supported to go there, I think is such an important piece, because what I've witnessed over the 20 years of doing this work is that if you don't attend to spirit in your healing from sexual violence, things continue to maybe present themselves in a way that when you do include that spiritual work, can kind of soften some of the ways that triggers can happen and that sort of thing. And you can really build a foundation that allows for more, just like easier access to resilience, I think. And I want to say that I don't mean spiritual or spirit in the way that it's attached to religion, in any way, but just that giving people an opportunity to explore that, I think, is a really important aspect. And I think that that can also be part of our physical experience as well, right? I think being supported to have different practices where you're able to be in touch with your body in whatever way that feels comfortable. And that might be that you're compartmentalizing or that you can't have communication with your body, but really being able in a supportive way to explore relationship with body after sexual violence, I think is another really important area.
Yeah, especially it's like that connection with like with ourselves too, right? With our
Yes.
own person too. Getting back to who we were and who we are now.
And I think for some folks who have been impacted by sexual harm earlier in their lives, I remember speaking with a residential school survivor about concepts of like going back, and they gifted me wisdom around like for some of us, there is no going back, right? It's just a reimagining of what could have been at a different point, right? And so, yeah, sometimes it might be too much to be in your body, but it's also really important data and knowledge for us to hold that it is too much, right? And being offered the opportunity to explore those things, I think is, again, just like a really important part. I know as a survivor myself, I lived in my head, and I often still find myself living in my head a lot. And there's good reason for that, right? Sometimes it's too much to inhabit our bodies in ways that don't feel good or safe. But it's also really good data about how we're doing and what might be emerging for us and where we might need more healing or more attention. And then,
Go
no,
ahead.
go ahead. Go,
So I
go.
was gonna say like that way you were talking about the spiritual to not being like in a religious, maybe like conventional way of the world. It's also like understanding, going in introspective with ourselves and understanding what we
Yes.
really need, what our body's asking for, what our mind is asking for too.
Yeah, absolutely. And what our heart needs, you know, I think so much of healing from sexual violence is also grieving. And we don't often talk about grief in relation to sexual violence, but many of us have to give up communities or relationships or a particular way that we liked engaging in our body or went to go to certain places within our cities or towns. There's usually something that we need to change or that shifts, and allowing for that grieving process really does, yeah, affect our spirit, in really important ways.
Yeah. And I feel
Yeah.
like all you're saying too, I guess like it comes from like years too of like not only working but like a survival, like experiencing life from a new point of view too. So I would like to know how was your own understanding of healing evolve over time, especially working like so closely with survivors and community movements. And there are any moments that help you reframe what healing looks like, either personally or collectively?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think we're all kind of taught to think about healing. Well, maybe not all of us, but I think in my generation, like I'm, you know, in my mid to late 40s, and I feel like when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, lots of people talked to us about like healing as a linear concept. And I think what I've learned a lot over time, and I think particularly from recovery communities, that just an acknowledgement that things happen in our lives and they become that the goal often is to have those things become chapters in our books instead of the title of our book, but to let go of the idea that healing means that we're going to return to something or that we are never going to live through those things that we've experienced again, right? That somehow that triggers are not going to be something that live within us or alongside of us forever, but really learning how to be in relationship with those things. And I think that really changed for me, both how I experienced when things kind of reemerged for me, or I experienced triggers, and that it didn't instantly kind of shift me into like a disappointed place, like I was losing ground or that something wasn't working, but instead really started to be able to see that those pieces that reemerged as data, so as information that helped me then track, okay, this thing happened and I can understand my feelings to that in this particular way, which also supported me to be like kinder and more compassionate to myself and people around me, but also just like gave me really good insight into what might be coming up, and not just feel like overwhelmed and disappointed that I was, that it felt like a backslide or,
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it links with this idea that like healing is not linear too. Like our mind will give us more information depending on like where we are at that point too.
That's
Maybe right
right.
now we are exposed to a little bit of the trauma we went through. And a couple of years it might reemerge like new information in our brain too. Like, okay, now you're ready to deal with this other part too.
Yeah.
So it's understanding that like those moments come and go too. And it's an ongoing progress and an ongoing work, individual work that we have to do with our minds too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And like is anything specifically, maybe not specifically, but any kind of example you can give of like how you saw healing maybe in another person that you were like, huh, maybe like I didn't see it that way when I was dealing with my own healing, or I didn't see it that way at work. Like some aha moment that you live through working with victims and survivors too.
I think one of the people Well, two of the people that I had the extreme honor of walking alongside for many, many years because their court cases took quite a long time. I think so, lots of people will critique the criminal legal system and say that court takes a really, really long time and that it's unfair to people. But I think two of the people that I got the chance to walk aside really helped me change that narrative. I was alongside somebody for almost 3 years before we got to court, and she had an opportunity to testify. And the changes and the integration that happened for her from the time we met in hospital until the time she sat on the stand at Supreme Court was so significant, that I think it's really reframed, like, just that time, we do need time, Yes, it can suck to have to wait for your court date, and it can create a lot of anxiety. And I also think that having the time to unravel yourself from the ways in which rape culture has impacted and influenced your life as a survivor requires like time and love and tenderness and like the ability to move in and out of focusing on these pieces. And so I think it was, yeah, just a really important piece so that when I hear people saying like we should be pushing, for quicker trials, like, we should be moving people through the courts at a different pace, it really does give me the opportunity to say, listen, like, yes, the person who's caused harm deserves, a timely trial, and having survivors have to sit and wait for a long time really does impact them. And, there's this other thing about integration so that people can find the language to describe their experience, can move through stages of grief to come to a place to have understanding about what they're then living with from the legacy of harm they've experienced, and are able to like show up and be the best witnesses that they can and want to be. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty big piece that I've learned over the years for sure.
And I feel like it links to with like this whole idea of having time for yourself to process everything, like not rushing yourself to and be able to, as you said, to like grieve in peace, feel all your feelings. And I feel like that's why like place like Salado to like this contention and this community involvement is so important too for the healing process of people. And I feel that like sets me too for the next question. So it's more about like your professional experience in this case too, and how does community involvement impact this individual healing process, especially after trauma or violence? What role do you think the community plays in creating a safe space for healing and justice?
Oh man. Yeah.
It is a big one.
Well, I just think it's everything, honestly. And I'm sure you've heard me say this, but sexual violence is systemic violence, right? It's not happening in isolation. It's not one or two people. We're looking at harm that is being caused that is part of the fabric of our society. And it's really hard to heal from something that is systemic individually because alongside of that, you've got a whole bunch of narratives around people who have experienced harm in this realm being responsible for that harm. And so when you are alone with that information being the dominant voice that you're hearing, it's very easy for people to find it very challenging to stay on this earth when they are being seen as the one that's ultimately responsible for what's happened to them. If you move that person into community and into spaces where they hear stories from other people who, of course, did not experience the exact same thing as them, but there are echoes that feel so familiar, and it's like balm. It's like soothing balm to be in a room with people that you instantly feel like they understand, you know, what you've experienced, and being able to be there with each other and be supported by a container that allows for really important conversations to happen is what healing has to look like, you know? And of course, we deserve like individual spaces to work through the like very kind of detail-y stuff that emerges for us personally at our intersections and based on all of our lived experience, maybe before or after. But I really do think community and building community with and for survivors is one of the most important ways that we can heal.
Yeah. And I think something really important you say to say this idea of hearing stories, like opening up the floor for conversation, for communicating, not having this as a taboo topic that no one wants to talk about, no one wants to touch it.
Right.
But having this conversation is so important for not only for survivors, but like for everyone else to understand what is going on too. Understand that this is not just a minimal problem that happens every here and there, you know? But how more like how it's like the living situation of many people too. It's the daily life of a lot of people.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think like you're touching a really important point too about how it is systemic. It's not only like a private problem. It's like this thing within our justice system, with our education system, with our health system. And I wanted to ask you too, like since many survivors not only have to carry this pain from the trauma and their experience, but also for that the responses that follow after. How can transformative justice offer more expansive healing-centered responses to harm than traditional punitive systems?
Well, I think the really like important work that's being done within like transformative and restorative principled approaches is that it looks further than just the person that's been harmed and the person that's responsible for the harm. It also looks at like the conditions that have allowed that to happen in the first place, and whether that's within a relationship or within a family system or within community, it looks at those like primary, secondary, and tertiary pieces. And is also not just about, you know, forgiveness or compassion. It's also about like boundaries and accountability. And so I think if we were able to build our institutions and our schools and our families around the idea that we are intra-connected, and that we need to build systems within all of these, you know, primary, secondary, tertiary ways that we are with each other that are rooted in the ability to show up when we cause harm and not be seen as bad or being blamed, but really looking at, you know, what allowed me to behave in this way? What supports do I need? What is the need that was unmet that had me behaving in this way? And then what do I need to do differently next time? How might you want me or not want me in your life? Like those are all practices that we can start, like I said, with my kiddo You know, one of the biggest teaching pieces for me was when I was tickling him when he was little, and I was thinking about